Aloha and welcome to 6-Bit Storybooks Podcast, a podcast where time spent together is focused on slowing down, absorbing the beauty that is around you, and loving the moment that you can create. I'm your hostess, Melissa, and today, before I go a step further, I'd like to remind you of how valuable you are to this podcast. Your emails and interactions motivate me to work hard and to bring you the best content possible. And because you are so worth it, today is tons of yarn education and a little bit of technology know-how. So much so that I've got our first two-part episode to share with you today. And the cool thing is, you don't have to wait a week to get it. Today, you have a split episode of episode 10A and 10B. One interview, but split into two parts to help you just listen to it without having to dedicate a ton of time. But also, I try to put it into a creative way to manage that you could download a little bit and listen, and get up and move on, and listen to the next segment without having to wait once you've finished. Today is definitely a teaching and learning episode, and I'll be joined for this episode by Stephanie, a guest that we've had visit before on episode 4 when we learned about some great tips on getting your best knitting photos. Stephanie is a yarn dyer and color ambassador, and she is always getting my attention with her articles and posts that delve specifically into a topic in order for us to fully understand it. Not too long ago, Knitty, the online magazine, shared on their site one of Steph's posts about social media interactions and changes and what that meant to us in the knitting world. She is working on now what will eventually become an ebook packed full with helpful insight for knitters. Last time she joined us, she provided a free e-booklet on photography, and today she is giving us another amazing treat that I am very excited to share with you. Without any more ado, let's get on with the show. Today, we are going to unpack the understanding color topic a bit, such as qualities of colors in hand-dyed yarn, as well as share insight into the changes that we may not understand is happening from monitor to monitor as our beautiful images on different devices are enhanced and made so much clearer. And to help us kind of walk through these ideas, you've got quite a bit to say, don't you?
I do. I have a lot to say on this, actually.
You've been spending quite a bit of time researching and digging into these topics, haven't you?
Yeah, this is more or less my whole world. I people think that I sell yarn to knitters and crocheters, but actually I sell color. So how colors are presented and how colors are understood is incredibly important to me.
It is. And for those of you who are listening in and have been listening since episode 1, this is episode 10, and I am beyond delighted to have the head space cadet and dyer at Space Cadet Yarn, Stephanie Alford, here with us today. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Could you just share with us briefly what it is that, I know you say you share color, but tell people who haven't had a chance to meet you before, just a little bit about you, if you were going to give them that 60-second overview of who you are, what you love, and why you are here chatting with me, what brought you here?
Well, I never managed to do this in 60 seconds. But as you said, I am the dyer and the head space cadet at Space Cadet Yarn. It's a company that I started 5 years ago when I discovered that after dabbling in every type of fiber art that you can think of, I found that dyeing really is my calling. It is the thing that I enjoy more than anything else. And I am a lifelong knitter. And I love knitting, but knitting does not give me the same sort of instant gratification that dyeing does. And I guess I am kind of an instant gratification girl. So I grabbed onto dyeing and I just ran with it and I thoroughly enjoy it. And 5 years later, I'm now making my living at it. And I go into the studio every day and think, wow, I cannot believe I get to do this for a living.
Oh, yeah. And it really shows in your work. And I'm excited. It's nice to be able to have a connection with you so that you can come back here for the podcast and share more and more. You also are a featured writer with your own little featured section in 6-Bit Storybooks.
Yeah.
And you and I do a lot together, and it's a lot of fun to have those aha moments with you where you have something brilliant to share. So before you really give us some amazing content, and I'm going to share with listeners in just a second about how today we're going to talk about understanding color, solids, semi-solids, tonals, variegated, kind of unpacking wild colors and understanding those better so we all speak a common language. We're also going to talk about just the way the computer has come so far that it's sometimes can sabotage your work.
Absolutely.
Before we get into that, though, I'd like to just take a second and hear about your business. It's 5 years old now. And when you started, how many bases did you have for yarn?
One base. Started, well, you know, yeah. No, this is the truth. You buy yarn by the kilo. Mm-hmm. And I could only afford 1 kilo. Things were really tight. This was, I was a stay-at-home mother and I had 2 little kids. And so we were on 1 salary and I could literally afford I only allowed myself 1 kilo of yarn and 4 colors, 4 colors of dye, the primaries plus black. Mm-hmm. And I did that really because that was all that I could justify spending money on. And, you know, you hear these stories of businesses starting where somebody, I don't know, buys like a pound of apples and sells them. And with the money they make from that, they go and buy 2 pounds of apples. And from the money they make with that, they buy 4 pounds of apples. And that is exactly how this business started. I had one base. I bought 10 skeins and sold those and was amazed that they sold, absolutely gobsmacked that they sold. And then with the money from that, went and bought 20 skeins and dyed those. And it literally just went on from there.
That's so much what the entrepreneurial spirit is. It's just so
awesome.
It's funny
actually, because when I talked to my accountant about it years later, and she sort of said to me, so how much have you invested in this business? Cause she needed to know like separate. And I was like, well, kind of nothing other than those first 10 skeins. I never took any outside money and put it in. I literally just built it, grew it on the back of what I had sold and then bought a little more and then sold that and bought a little more. And so there was, the whole thing started, the seed money was enough money to buy 10 skeins.
Yeah. And just reinvested it.
Yeah. 10 skeins and 4 colors.
That's amazing. And so that's where we started when Space Cadet is beginning, but we're moving on. And now 5 years later, how many bases do you have?
15 bases and 3 types of fiber.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
and
it is.
Yeah,
it is
you've
really
you've
good.
Actually progressed. And what I was going to say is this year has it been about a year now? It was earlier this year, 2015, you brought the fiber in, right?
Yes. Yeah. The fiber is fairly new. So we have I really like, we have the 15 bases, everything from lace weight to bulky. Mm-hmm. And we have the 3 types of fiber, but we still only dye from primaries. We have cyan, magenta, yellow, red, and black. So every color that we create is the dye itself is actually mixed by hand from primaries.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because there's so many colors, and that's something that I think is going to be a lot of fun today when we take listeners on a little field trip, like an actual listeners, when you're sitting here with us, dear listener, we are actually taking you from listening to engaging, and we're hoping it works really well. And you'll get to see some amazing blends of colors that you make from those. It's awesome.
Yes.
Now, before we move any further, you've got your yarn business that you do and you're dyeing yarn and now you're dyeing fiber, but you also have a blog and that's kind of where we're pulling this information from. You spend a lot of time trying to educate and teach us the knitting public, the fiber enthusiast. Where does that come from? Before we unpack all the things that you have shared for us today, can you just tell us kind of where that originated from? I mean,
Well, it actually comes from interacting with my customers, which we do. Obviously, people email us or they tweet me and they ask questions. But a lot of times when we go to shows, I end up in conversations with customers, and it's so much fun to hear their questions and to realize what it is that they are wanting to know, or what their burning questions are. And I get these questions that they surprise me, because I'm working in color every day. And, you know, you think that the things that you know are obvious to everyone. And then I end up in a conversation with a customer and I realize just because something is obvious to me, or it's something that I work in every day, does not mean that it's obvious to my customers. And so I began sort of really thinking about all the questions that I was being asked. Mm-hmm. And deciding to create blog posts based on those, to, because if one person is asking me at a show, they're surely not the only person who has this question. And so to take those questions and put them into blog posts and start to share the answers to these questions that I'm getting asked over and over. And they're about color, about our dyeing process, about our fibers and the different ways that fibers and dyes react with one another. And it's funny, because you're saying it's education, or to me, it just feels like sharing something that I know, that I feel like I want everybody to know these things, because unless you know about color, you're buying. What's interesting is most people, they go out to buy yarn, or they fall in love with knitting or crochet, and they immediately school themselves up on different types of yarn, different fiber content. They learn about good quality wool, cashmere, silk, nylon, and how that affects the yarn. But whenever they buy yarn, they're also buying color. Mm-hmm. You can't buy yarn without buying color. And it amazes me how many people are so confused by color. And then when they knit, they buy it and it looks beautiful in a skein. And then when they knit and crochet, it does something completely different from what they were expecting.
And that's it. I'm so excited. I want to jump into it right now. Yeah. So what we're going to do is, if you are listening right now, you can actually text, if you're in the U.S., text to the number 44222, Space Cadet Yarn, one word, SpaceCadetYarn. Again, that number is 44222. And the word that you'll simply use is Space Cadet Yarn, all one word. And we will deliver this special treat to you right now, instantaneously, as we are engaged with you. And as you're listening to it on your device, you can keep the podcast running and refer to this just amazing handout that Stephanie has put together for us. So as we're talking about things, you can see. We've also got a special page prepared just for you, dear listener, that we're going to share with you as it progresses. Now, if you're outside of the U.S. or you don't want to text, you can simply keep the podcast running, head over to the show notes, and click on the episode 10 download button. And that button will give you the same delivery option to have this sent to you, because we'd really like this to be not just me talking with you, Stephanie, and you talking back with me, but all of us, that you and I and our friend that is listening right now and the greater community, to really have time spent together, learning together in real time. So you can also tweet us as you're listening, and we would be really excited to get that. And you can just use the hashtag number six, and it's number six, sorry, with Steph. So it's the number six with Steph, and that will let us know that you're listening right now. It's going to be kind of fun to see what you guys have. So let's
Steph with, Steph with a PH.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Number
some
six.
Some Stephs are F, but I am a PH.
You are. So it's the number six, WITHSTEPH. And that hashtag we will look for and try to answer some of your questions. Or absolutely, it would be a lot of fun to just see what your response is. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to jump right in. You've created this great tool for us that is going to show us images and explain to us and really rock our world. So let's get into it. We're going to learn understanding color from you.
Excellent. Well, the PDF starts by giving definitions for the basic color categories when it comes to, well, I was going to say hand-dyed yarn, but really it's all yarn. Mm-hmm. And then if you go through to the web page, you can see pictures as examples.
Okay.
So the yarn can be divided into two, yarn color can be divided into two major categories, two major groupings. One is yarn that is a single color, okay, and there are types of yarn within there. And the other is yarns that are multicolored. And the single colored yarns come in three different types. They come in solids, semi-solids, and tonals. And these, it's funny, I have had so many conversations with people where we are using these terms, and then I realize partway through the conversation that they are meaning one thing and I am meaning something else.
My hand is up in the air I'm pointing to me because you and I have that issue where, you know, I say solid and you tell me, okay, solid is this.
Right.
Right. And then I'm like, wait a minute. No, I'm talking about this. And you're like, okay, Mel, you mean solid for this category. And this, as it relates to what I make, is actually a semi-solid. Right. So why don't you break that down for us?
Sure. So the three, when you're looking at a yarn and you're seeing a single colored yarn, you are looking at either a solid, a semi-solid, or a tonal. And the definitions are really very straightforward. A solid is a yarn where it truly is one color from one end of the yarn all the way to the other one. And as you're knitting it, every stitch is the same color. And to be honest, that is something that can really only be achieved by large commercial yarn manufacturers. It's not something that that hand dyers can do. And this is why.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, there you go. You answered me. I was just like, I don't know.
And this is why. Because large yarn manufacturers can dye the fiber before it's spun. And it's the nature, and I don't think necessarily a lot of people, unless you have done dyeing, this isn't something that you necessarily realize. Your dye pot, the color in your dye pot is never 100% even. It always has areas in the dye pot where there's more dye and areas in the dye pot where there's less dye. You can't tell when you look at the dye pot. You're just, imagine making a pot of soup and me saying to you, well, what part of the pot has the most potatoes in it? And you're looking at the top of the pot, you'd be like, I don't know, there are potatoes in there somewhere, but I don't know where the potatoes are sitting in the pot. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when you're looking at the dye pot. Some of the dye will be, there'll be more dye on the left-hand side versus the right-hand side, but when you're looking at the top of the pot, you really can't tell. So you put your yarn or your fiber in, and the dye strikes where it is, and it's never, ever 100% even. But the large commercial yarn companies, they dye the fibers first, and then they put them through a massive blending machine. It's a huge machine that kind of, it's like a big mixer, like a giant egg beater. And it takes all those fibers, which some of them may be slightly darker, some of them may be slightly lighter, and it blends them all together again so that they're even. Mm-hmm. And then when the yarn is spun, even though the individual fibers may be slightly darker or lighter from one to another, the overall yarn is one color. It's all blended together so that it is just one color.
And so that would be a true solid then.
That's a true solid.
Okay. But what happens when someone like you wants to dye a solid?
Right. So for the most part, most hand-dyed yarn companies are working with yarns that they have bought undyed from commercial mills. Now we have our dye pot in front of us, and maybe there's more dye on the left-hand side and less dye on the right-hand side, but we're putting into the dye pot spun yarn. And the spun yarn goes in, and it takes the dye where it takes it. So some of it comes out a little bit darker, and some of it comes out a little bit lighter. But when it comes out, there's nothing you can do. When it comes out, if you see that it's got areas that are darker and lighter, there's nothing you can do. You can't now re-blend the fibers, and you can't re-spin the yarn. Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose you could, but it would be a ridiculous amount of work. And so what you end up with is a yarn that has darker and lighter areas to it. Now, that is the nature of hand-dyed yarn, and to me, that is the absolute beauty of hand-dyed yarn, but it's never truly 100% a solid color. Even when you do get something that is, hand dyers can get incredibly close to a 100% solid yarn, but it never ever actually truly gets there. So that is a semi-solid yarn, because there will be areas where some spots are a little bit darker and some spots are a little bit lighter. And it gives depth and it gives real interest to your knitting or your crochet, because it isn't a flat color.
But most dyers, just so we're all speaking the same language, most indie dyers are going to call their solids, instead of saying it's semi-solid, will they say that it's, you know, a solid color? Is that kind of the idea? Is that it's as close as you can get to a solid? So that would be your air quotes solid.
So right now I'm talking to you in truly technical terms. Mm-hmm. But really, in regular conversation, nobody's being overly technical. Sure. Solids and semi-solids and tonals, really, they all get used interchangeably. But if you actually want to understand what the real difference is, and you want to make sure that you are speaking about it correctly, even if you use the terms casually in casual conversation, it's really good to have a foundation in your mind where you understand what the differences are and why, when you pick up a skein of what looks like solid hand-dyed yarn, and then you knit or crochet with it, and you notice that there are tonal qualities to it. There are darker spaces and lighter spaces. You understand why this, what looked like a solid, is doing that. Whereas if you buy a solid from a large commercial yarn company, you're going to get more of an even flat color. And by understanding that, you're going to be able to choose the yarn that actually is the right thing for your particular project and for your tastes.
Okay. Yeah, because if I'm thinking, I know my taste is, I like solids. I feel like now that I've been talking to you and reading up and kind of learning a bit more, I know that I like semi-solids. Mm-hmm. And then where it gets tricky for me is when I'm talking to you about, hey, you know what, I had this idea for a pattern, I'd like some yarn, and you're like, well, are you thinking of it as like a tonal? I'm like, oh, no, I don't want a tonal. And then as you're listening to me and I'm describing what I want, you're like, okay, you want a tonal. So can you explain what tonal actually, like what qualifies something as tonal?
Absolutely. So a tonal... Now, this gets a little bit tricky.
Which is why it's kind of good. We do have the PDF. So if you're listening to us now, you should check out Steph's PDF. And it should have a breakdown as you are looking at it of what we just talked about with a solid and a semi-solid. And now that we're talking on tonal, it will have it will afford you the opportunity to see some images and have some links to help break down what I thought was very useful for understanding the flow of how color moves. I thought you did a great job on that. So explain tonal. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. So a tonal, the first thing I should do is just explain what tones are.
Okay.
What we have been talking about so far, when we're talking about solids and we're talking about semi-solids, we're talking about the yarn or the fiber going into a dye bath of a single hue.
Okay.
Okay. So literally putting one color of dye into the dye bath, yarn goes in there. Maybe it takes the color in an even way, maybe it takes it unevenly, but it is one single color.
Okay.
Whereas tones are when you take that color and you mix it with either white or black. Okay. So if we're thinking about a red, if you mix a red with white, you're going to get something more akin to a pink. Mm-hmm. But if you mix it with black, you're going to start going into maroons and blood reds and until you get into some very, very deep reds. The colors where they're mixed with either white or black are the tones. So you have the main hue, which is a nice pure red, mm-hmm. and then going either lighter or darker are the tones. And to get very technical, the lighter shades are called tints. Oh, I just mixed up my terms there. The lighter colors are tints, mm-hmm. and the darker colors are shades. But shades and tints are tones. So when we talk about a tonal yarn, a lot of times people think of tonal yarns as being, they are actually thinking of multicolored yarn. So if we were talking about, again, a red, a tonal red is one shade, one color of red with darker tones and lighter tones in the same skein, but not different colors of red. So we're not talking about, say, a pure primary red with a slightly yellowy red that's heading towards orange mixed with maybe a bluer red that's heading towards purple. A lot of times people will look at that and call that tonal, and I understand why they do, but technically that is not a tonal. That is heading into variegated territory.
And that's where I get mixed up, because I know, and you know, that I am a bit leery of variegated, which actually I found out that I'm not quite as weird as I thought, but the tones actually will stay within the red family. So, I mean, or whatever family. So we have the hue, for example, that's red, or in your awesome illustration, you give us a red, a yellow, and a blue.
Right.
And we stay in that linear family of red. We don't jump from column red to column yellow to column blue or somewhere within. We are just moving from the pure red to whiter additions.
And
from darker
that
additions.
Pure red towards a whiter red or towards a blacker red, but not from that pure red towards an oranger red or towards a purpler red. Does that make sense?
It does. And it finally clicked for me. And dear listeners, I don't know if this is a revelation for you. You guys just must be further ahead than I am. And believe it or not, I've been knitting a number of years and crafting since I was a kid, but I never understood this concept. And I did take art. I took costume design. I did a lot of things with the theater. And I knew colors. And I knew how to mix paint, but I never, when it comes to yarn, I would think, okay, tonal. And I would, boom, my brain would go right to variegated. Where now I'm discovering that I can actually stretch my legs a bit and kind of walk around in a new area because I feel like now when I see subheadings where it, you know, I'm shopping online for yarn and I always go to solid, semi-solid. But now I can branch out a little bit and I can actually go to tonal because it's not scary for me because it's a color, it's within that color family and my brain can get around that.
It's kind of like, it's like, I know you don't want to go all the way to variegated, but it's like little baby steps, baby steps away from flat color.
It is, which to kind of qualify this for people who may be used to your yarn before. And because last week I was talking about Drizzle, the hat Drizzle named for your yarn Drizzle. Mm-hmm. Now is Drizzle, If we were going to explain to people, because I love that gray, people know that gray. Friends, if you don't, just look through my Instagram account and there was a picture of me wearing my hat and it's gray. That is Drizzle. Is Drizzle considered a semi-solid? Is it tonal? And if we were going to kind of pick one of your colors and walk through the evolution of it.
Okay.
So can we just talk about Drizzle is what kind of color?
Well, actually, this is funny because this is where we can... I mean, this is a total color, technical color geek out here.
Okay.
Because,
we have a lot
because
of
the truth of
like
the matter is, for the most part, it doesn't matter whether it's tonal or whether it's a semi-solid. They're so close.
Okay.
And most customers could look at it and just say, oh, this looks semi-solid to me, or this looks tonal, and this works, and I think it's going to work in my project. But if we want to geek out.
I was going to say, if we're digging in, we might as well go all in.
It.
Yeah.
technically, Drizzle is a semi-solid, and this is why. I start with the shade of gray that I want to dye it in. I put a single shade of gray. I'm saying shade. Again, I'm mixing my terms. I start with a color of gray, the hue of gray that I want to put into my dye pot, and it's just a single hue, and in goes the yarn, and it takes the color where it wants to take the color. In some places, there's in the dye pot, there's more dye, so that part, that bit of the yarn will get it a little bit more intensely. In other parts, there's a little bit less dye, so that color comes out a little lighter. Here's the thing. I am dyeing white yarn, off-white, but mostly white yarn. Mm-hmm. And so I am creating tones because you have white combined with a color. So those are your tints, which is a tone. But I'm not actually mixing my gray with any darker gray. I'm not adding more black to it to make it a darker gray. So this is a semi-solid. This is the situation is that I have put a single color into the dye pot and I've put my yarn in, and the variation in the color comes from the fact that the dye doesn't strike evenly. It doesn't come from the fact that I have taken a color and added white or added black to it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And so that we can all understand this, there is a link in there, and I'll make sure that Stephanie updates the PDF to say, you know, in parentheses next to it, this is a link Mel's talking about. There's a link to your page, and for people who are just listening, it's spacecadetyarn.com/spacecadet-colorways, colorways. When we get to that page, and we're going to use that again in a minute, but just because I just want to make sure that we're clear. So Sliver is a lighter hue that you mix up.
Right.
Drizzle is a specific hue that you mix up.
Yes.
When I move to dark skies and I roll my mouse over or my I put my finger over dark skies. Now I see that one and it has pops of black in it. Is that tonal then? Or is that just a darker color?
In truth, it's just a darker color. Those pops of black are just, they're not actually pops of black. It might just be your screen that's making it look like pops of black. It's just areas where it's gray dye and it's just areas where the gray has struck the yarn a little more intensely in spots.
Okay. All right.
So that, those are all three of those are semi-solids. None of them are true tonals. In fact, as I think about it, I do have some true tonals, but in the links on the PDF, mm-hmm. you will see a link for tonals. There are two really good examples of tonals. One of them is Headstrong. Mm-hmm. Headstrong is actually made by combining How Dare You. How Dare You is a beautiful, vibrant orange, really in-your-face orange. Mm-hmm. And Headstrong starts with How Dare You, and then we add some tones to it. And that changes it. So it still has little pops of How Dare You, but it changes into, when it goes darker, it actually changes into a really beautiful rust color.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah, when you slide when you scroll back over the two, you can see how it changes.
Yes. And the other one, and I have a photo of the two of them twisted together, are Tickled and Troublemaker, which if you're on the Colorways page, you go clean to the top, you'll see Tickled and Troublemaker right next to each other. Mm-hmm. Again, these Troublemaker is actually a shade of Tickled. It is a darker version of Tickled. And so although they're not in one skein, if I did take those, if I took the dye for Tickled and the dye for Troublemaker and put them onto one skein, that would be a tonal.
Oh, and you have an image of that for us to see, because I was looking at it and thinking that is two different colors. But yes, you can see the image where it will be our example underneath tonals, where you'll see, of course, tonal of Headstrong. And then when you scroll down a bit, you'll see that it says Tickled on the left and Troublemaker. And that actually looks beautiful together to look at it and enjoy it. But again, this is where I have to take small steps, because I look at that and I'm like, maybe if it was the same color gray on either side. Okay, so we're
baby
under
steps.
Yes.
Baby steps.
All right, so this is the more sublime end of things, but let's really dig in quickly into understanding color, because I want to continue on that with the variegateds, but then I really think that something that I think is going to blow listeners' minds is getting to the end of this segment where we talk about what you see about these colors we discuss and how your computer changes it. So let's move on to the variegateds.
Okay, so
which you like.
So we have been talking about yarns that are dyed in a single color, whether that is just one hue or whether that is a hue with its tones. But either way, it is one color. As I said with the red, when we were talking about the red, we were talking about a red that might be lighter or darker, or it might be a true primary red. But we were not talking about a red that also went towards a more orangey red or went towards a more bluey, purpley red. Mm-hmm. Variegateds are when you are moving between hues. So if you had a yarn that was a primary red and it also had, if you have a yarn that is a primary red and it also has pops of yellow and pops of green and pops of orange, that is definitely variegated. But variegated is also when you have a primary red and it, in some areas, it leans more towards and starts to go a little more orange. And in other places, it leans towards purple and starts to go a little more blue. That is also a variegated. As soon as you move away from that single hue and you start introducing other colors, then what we're looking at is a variegated yarn.
Okay.
And people get very confused about this. Again, as I said, if the colors seem close to one another, they often think of them as they think that the correct term is tonals. But if we're being very technical, as soon as you have more than one color, it's a variegated.
Okay. So then we need to unpack variegateds. Yeah. And there are some variegateds that are, subtle, and they're kind of like the quiet neighbor that, you see as you're mowing your lawn and you're like, hey, and then you've got the variegated that's like the college party group that's in the cul-de-sac behind you. And every Friday night they are having a crazy party. They're wild. So,
You may be revealing quite a lot about your neighborhood here, Mel.
Actually, no, for me, it's awesome because I'm kind of quietly tucked away from it all. But I do remember back in the day when we had neighbors. So, yeah. So share for us what kind of classification ideas might be helpful for us when understanding variegateds.
Okay, I'm going to explain the two types of variegateds, and then I'm going to explain something that you need to understand about them so that when you're choosing them, you don't end up getting surprised by the way they behave in your knitting or crochet. So I break variegateds down into gentle variegateds and wild variegateds. Okay. Some people say lightly variegated and heavily variegated. There's all sorts of ways to do it. I just think of them as things that are gentle and things that are wild.
I think you're all crazy. That's just me.
Ones that are having a party in the backyard and driving all the neighbors crazy. Gently variegated colorways are ones where none of the colors, you have definite colors, definite different colors in the yarn, but mm-hmm. none of them are jarring towards each other. So these are colors that are either near one another on the color wheel, or they might not be near one another, but they blend together really well. So if you look at our examples, one of them is my colorway Time Traveler. And Time Traveler, when you look at it, it's shades of green. It has a little bit of teal blue. It has a number of different shades. Well, I shouldn't say shades. Again, I'm being technical. So I should say it's different hues of green. There are yellower greens and bluer greens. And in some places, actually, the bluer greens kind of work their way into teals. But you can see that those yellow greens, regular greens, and teals are all going to work together. Mm-hmm. It also has little places where the yellowy greens start to actually come out into being yellows, and then in a couple of places they kind of turn into coppery colors. Mm-hmm. So again, these are all related, and there is also a lot of gray in there.
Yes.
And gray is not gray is not green, it's not teal, it's not yellow, but it isn't jarring against any of these colors. And then as you knit with Time Traveler, because none of the colors are jarring, they all start to blend into one another. And actually, if you were to knit a sweater in Time Traveler and wear it, somebody standing across the room from you would look at it and they would probably think that it was one color. They would see a solid color because all these colors will blend together mm-hmm. so beautifully.
And what I like is, for our illustration purposes, so that we get a better understanding, I like how you have the skein kind of twisted up, and then you take the time to show us, because for me, when I see that skein, that's as far as my brain can get with it. And I think people are of course, you know, you're an artist. You know, if I was going to be a painter, I would paint in black, whites, and gray. I'd be more of your monochromatic painter.
Right.
And then we have these other people that would be these brilliant sweeping colorways. And I think that's where the variegated friends that are out there in knitting. For me, though, it's helpful because I can see you've got this yarn, and then you show me how that color story on a skein plays out on a flat plane. So I appreciate that. And so that's comforting when I look at it. When we check out the next one, that first image of the next one, I like it. I'm like, man, I like this. And then when I see it knit up, I'm just like, I need a cold shower. I need all the showers.
So the next one is called Molten Cool.
And which it is gorgeous.
I love it. But I work in color all day. People actually at shows, they'll say to me, what skein should I pair with this one? And I'm like, I am so the wrong person to ask because, man, I just mix my colors. Like, you know, if they're the kind of person who wants colors that blend together, that's not where my brain goes. I dye yarn all day, and one of the most fun things in the world is to put colors together that are just crazy. So this is Molten Cool, and this is what I would call a wildly variegated colorway.
And now I'm gonna be rude and interrupt you right there because I've just had this, like, I'm just like, oh man. So I'm looking at this color and I love it. I love hearing that story that you said. And what I would love for listeners to do right now is, when you are looking at Molten Cool, wherever you are, whatever device you are on, you are looking at that, dear friends, and you can see all the different colors. I know what color stands out to me. And what I'd love is to have the listeners use the hashtag #6withSteph and tell me, if you were going to use this, what is the color that you'd be like, I'd pair it with this? Because I would love to hear what people would say.
Yes.
If you're not on Twitter, what's really cool is you can, of course, go to the Ravelry group And you can find our Six Bits Ravelry group, where we will definitely link up with Stephanie too. And I am going to put this image up there, and I'll do a drawing this week. I've got plenty of mini skeins. The winner of this week's comments, just comment below and tell us, when you see this, what in the world, what is it that your brain automatically leaps to that you would pair it with? I'm just curious. I love hearing what knitters
say.
That
is a really interesting exercise, because what I have found through conversations with customers is that we can have a multicolored colorway like this one. Mm-hmm. And they, different customers will look at it and say that it is, one customer will come up and say, oh, this maroon colorway. And somebody else will come up and say, this purple colorway. And somebody else will say, this yellow colorway or this blue colorway. And different colors pop out to them and look dominant to different people. And I have this problem, it's not a problem, but it's a challenge when I am working with shops, and sometimes shops come to me and ask me to create custom colorways for them based on a photograph or based on their shop colors or something like that. And especially if they're giving me a photograph, I have to go back to them and say, I can create a colorway from this, but you have to tell me what colors you see as being dominant, especially if it's something like a flower. Mm-hmm. I may be seeing as dominant completely different colors from what they're seeing. They think they're going to get pinks, and my eye is being drawn to the blue specks that mm-hmm. are all over the flower or something like that. And it is very, very interesting to see what colors jump out to certain people. And I think what jumps out to us is our favorite colors.
Oh yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So this is molten cool. And when you look at it, what makes it wildly variegated, besides the obvious fact that it is wildly variegated,
yeah.
is the fact that the colors on it are jumping all over the color wheel, right? We've mm-hmm. got blue, we've got purple, we've got golds, we've got maroons, which are a type of red. And if you think of the color wheel, we have just leapt from one side to the other and back again and back again and back again. And yet they're all side by side in this one colorway.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about wildly variegated colorways is because the colors can be jarring, because they are jumping around the color wheel, you have to be very, very careful how you use them and very, very analytical when you look at them, so that you choose a pattern or an application for them that's really going to make the most of their beauty and is not going to, you can either do a wildly variegated colorway very, very well, or if you choose the wrong pattern for it or the wrong application, it can turn out
less
disastrous.
Than its potential.
Like, it can be clump barf. So if we look at this particular colorway knit up, mm-hmm. you can see all those different colors sitting right next to each other. They're we've got blues against yellows, against maroons, against pinks, against blacks. And depending on how you use it is going to be how successful this colorway is. I truly believe there are no bad colorways. There are some crazy wild colorways, but when they are used correctly, they will look stunning, absolutely stunning. And if they're not used correctly for that particular colorway, they'll end up looking terrible.
Yes. And you know what is interesting? I just want to qualify here, because I know the Six Bit Storybooks podcast listeners and people who read the publication, and people who know me, know I'm not a hater. I love everything. I love people. I love yarn. I'm not hating on the wildly variegated. I mean, in fact, as I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay. But I just know, for me, as my personality, I would be, I'm so tactile and so visual and so easily distracted, you know, squirrel, that I would not get any knitting done after maybe the first 4 inches of squared area, because I would be looking at it and trying to interpret the color story and trying to figure out what is the yarn going to do next. And I would get stuck. Like I literally would get stuck. However, what blows my mind is, after showing this wildly variegated skein and then showing this close up on how it is going to knit its story, I like this next segment that you share with us about, okay, you know what, just take a deep breath and walk back across the room and now take a good look at it.
Yes, yes. And actually, before I tell you about that, I'm just going to say that where you are getting nervous, you are, I know that you are thinking of variegated colorways for a whole sweater or for a whole cardigan.
Yes, and because that's for me, for knitting, I'm like, I love sweaters. I love that.
But I love variegateds combined with solids or semi-solids and used for accents. So I love a solid cardigan with a variegated collar, or a solid sweater with variegated cuffs, or a bit of color blocking somewhere on the sweater. So it's because, I mean, you look at Molten Cool knit up, it's mm-hmm. beautiful. It is a little bit like a party.
Parties are
fun, mm-hmm. but you don't want a party that lasts from 8 in the morning, well, until 8 in the morning the next day. You're exhausted. You want your parties to last like 3-4 hours. You have a great time and then you go home, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so using, if variegateds make you nervous, using a variegated for your whole sweater is a little bit like being a party person 24/7. Whereas,
and there are folks that are good with that. It's just
absolutely.
Girl, I'm so old now. I'm just kidding. I've already done my partying.
But using variegateds for smaller accents on larger projects, I actually love variegateds for the lining of pockets. If you have a cardigan that has pockets, and your sweater's in a semi-solid, but you line the pockets in a coordinating variegated. Every time you put your hands in your pockets, you see this little flash of this amazing color. It's such a cool thing.
And that's what I dig about those mini skeins, is the fact that I see a whole skein of variegated, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. But I get your mini skeins because I'm in both of the clubs. Right. So I get the variegated, and then I get the other. So we have variegated, and what's the other one?
The ombre and gradient mix.
Ombre and gradient, yes.
A multicolor mix and an ombre and gradient mix.
Yes. And so when I get the multicolor, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're so cute all bundled up. And then once I take them out of the bundle, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm glad you guys are so small, because I feel an obligation to use you, and I can't use you for the whole thing. But they make great cuffs for mittens. They make great projects for Elena's pockets, like you said. And she has actual things that I've taken sweaters, like store-bought in sweaters, and they don't have pockets. And your mini skeins have come in to the rescue, where I've gone and I've picked up stitches and done an afterthought pocket. There's tons of her sweaters and sweater jackets.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's perfect. She picks one out because she loves it, and she loves it. She is a kid. She is partying from 8 to 8.
Right.
She doesn't have to go to work in the morning and pay the bill, so she's down with it. But, yeah, the mini skeins, I think, are great for people like me to slowly get their feet wet in it. Okay, well, in light of time, though, I want to move on and understand variegated. Just real quickly, briefly share with us the up close and then take a step back idea.
Okay. So this is, we've talked about variegateds and gently variegateds and wildly variegateds as if the definition is set and solid. It isn't actually. We've said that gently variegateds are where the colors are either near each other on the color wheel, or even if they're not near each other on the color wheel, at least they are not jarring to one another. And we've said that wildly variegateds are where the colors jump all around on the color wheel, or they're the really high contrast between the different colors in the skein. And we've said it as if those are set definitions. There's actually one other element that I'm going to explain that changes that, and that is the length of the color repeat. Oh. Because whether we have colors that are near each other on the color wheel or far away on the color wheel, whether they are not jarring or whether they're low contrast or high contrast, if the color repeats, and by color repeat I mean the length of yarn that is in one color before it changes into the next color, if those color repeats are very, very long, when it is knit or crocheted, what it creates is large areas of one color, and those large areas have very distinct edges. And so when it changes to the next color, you can really see it has gone from being this pink to being red, and it will look more variegated because you can see large areas of color that have very distinctly changed from one to another. If you have very short color repeats, and by very short color repeats I'm talking about a few inches at most, if you open up your skein and you look at it and you see that the color is changing every few inches rather than every 6 inches or 12 inches or 18 inches, if you have very short color repeats, those are going to give you little teeny tiny pops of color mm-hmm. all over your knitting or crochet. And tiny pops of color don't have distinct edges. They're not large sections of color that very clearly change from one to another. The whole thing ends up looking like it's more like the whole thing is in one color with little tiny just little moments of different color here and there. And even if those pops of color are high contrast, wildly variegated, mm-hmm. the overall effect will not actually look as variegated as even a low contrast colorway change does when the color repeats are very, very long, and so it creates areas of color with distinct edges.
Okay.
So when you're looking at your skein and you're like, oh, this is very gently variegated because these colors are not jarring, or you're looking at your skein and you're saying, oh, this is very highly variegated because there's a lot of high contrast between the colors. You really need to fully understand how it's going to behave in your knitting. You need to untwist it and look at how long those color repeats are, because the longer the color repeat, the more variegated it's going to appear. The shorter the color repeat, not necessarily the less variegated, but it may very well look less variegated. But the length of the color repeat has a big impact on whether or not it looks variegated to our eyes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love how you've been able to explain. I was actually taking notes. I was jotting things down while you were talking.
Oh, good. Okay. It's confusing stuff, and I get that it's confusing. I hope I was able to explain it in a way that makes a little bit of sense. But a lot of it really is get out of your comfort zone, try some of these, knit a couple of swatches, and just see how it comes out and whether it comes out looking like what you thought it was going to come out like.
Yeah.
Most of all, don't be afraid. Never be afraid.
So what I'm going to do now is let listeners take a break. Guys, we have, believe it or not, been talking for about 55 minutes. And so this is going to be part one of what is our first time ever doing two parts. And that way you guys can take this information, kind of process through it, and then continue with the same PDF and move on to part two, which will be an extra bonus for you guys. And we're going to talk about something that is super important in the second part of this episode that has to do with your monitor and understanding how these colors play up. Well, dear listener, thanks for joining in on this first part. And now you'll want to hang on to your download and be ready to go on an online field trip again with us a bit more in part two. Also, I will announce in part two this month's iTunes review winner, which I will tell you more about that, the winner, and how next time you might be that person. So join in when you're ready, and until then, aloha.